So this, the highest perfection of human life is achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, the practice of mystic power, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty that's remembered the Supreme Personality of God at the beginning of life. That's the goal of all Sankhya, Yoga, and here it says, Dharma Parinishtaya, which is more or less karma. So the goal of karma, dhyana, and yoga is to remember Krishna at the time of leaving the body. And here, somewhere it says, Everyone is anxious to achieve the highest perfection of his particular activity. Can anyone see that? Here in my book is page 11. Sorry, it's the last 4 or 5. Can someone read that? What's your name again, Madhavi?
Natasha. Everyone is anxious to achieve the highest perfection of this of his particular activity. And it is indicated herein that such perfection is Nayarana Shmiti.
Narayana.
Narayana Shmiti, is it?
Smriti.
Smriti. For which everyone must endeavor his best. In other words, life should be molded in such a manner that one is able to progressively remember the personality of Godhead in every step of life.
Does that sound familiar? You've heard that before? That's the conclusion of our Gita also. The Manana Bhagavato Madhya Jivan Namaskuru Mami Vaishasi Satyante Prati Dhani Priyosime. Krishna's in Prabhupada's purport, so that means always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your obeisances to me. The result is you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. In Prabhupada's purport, he writes that one should mold his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours a day, one cannot help but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise to such a devotee is that one is sure to go back to Krishna. And how should we think of Krishna according to that purport? One should think of Krishna as that blue boy, son of Mother Yasoda, who has a peacock feather in his hand, in his head, and some brothers that one should not even think of any other form of Krishna except for that form. So we should always think of Krishna like that. Now, text number 7. Yeah, you just read the English.
Okay, have it fit. Namely, the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regulative principles and restrictions take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord.
And here,
therefore, the highest perfection of transcendental realization is to take pleasure in hearing and describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord and not merging into his impersonal Brahma existence, for which the impersonalist monist aspires.
That's good.
This
is also a parallel to the first canto, where in the 7th chapter of the first canto, Sukadeva Goswami is described as that monist, and that famous Atmarama verse is given. Atmarama Shamunayo, Nidhiranta, Yad Urukrame, Kurvatya Haitikim Bhaktim, Itam Buddha Vidal Hare. That if those who are above the material existence take pleasure in hearing about Krishna, what does he do to an ordinary person? In other words, those who are above material existence, they have no attraction for anything material, and if they take pleasure in hearing about Krishna, then Krishna can't be anything material. That's the example used here. And this is all in the line that Sukadeva Goswami is telling Maharaj that the best thing to do is to hear about Krishna. But even the transcendentalists who are beyond material nature, they take pleasure in hearing about Krishna. And now we'll get a little summary about Sukadeva Goswami, how he came here to Srimad Bhagavatam himself. Text number 8.
In English?
Yes.
At the end of the Dwapara Yuga, I studied its great supplement of Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to all the Vedas, from my father Srila Dvaipayana Vyasadeva.
This is more or less almost like the same thing as the second canto. Matter of fact, even the words are the same. Vidam Bhagavatam Nama Brahma Brahma Sanyakam. This is also in the first canto. The same words. Putin Shloka Charitam Khan Bhagavan Shri. For Sri Goswami, he's had, as you probably know the story, he was in the womb of his mother for 16 years. His mother was becoming a little disturbed. The child was a little late, whatever. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva asked Sridhar Goswami, why are you staying in the womb for 16 years? And Sridhar Goswami said, because here everything is alright, because I'm merged in Brahman, but if I come out, I might fall in Maya. So his father said, no, I think you're advanced enough, you won't fall in Maya. But because Vyasadeva was a householder, Sridhar Goswami didn't trust him. So he had to go to Dwarka and ask Krishna to come, because somehow or another Shukadeva Goswami had some faith in Krishna. I guess that's because he's eternally Krishna's parrot, and he couldn't, it would be hard to go against Krishna when you're the parrot. In Krishna Lila, Shuka Deva Goswami Shuka, one of the parrots, Shuka and Sari. So he thought Krishna had nothing to gain by telling me I'll be alright. So when Krishna guaranteed him that he'll be alright, so he came out of the womb and just walked away. Because he didn't want to associate with his family, but he'd fall into Maya. But he expanded himself as another Shukadeva, who later on became a householder and had some children. Therefore the mother was quite satisfied that my son was normal. You know, he expanded himself as another Shukadeva. Mm-hmm. He expanded himself as another Shukadeva, and who later on became a householder, and he had his own family. So, at the same time, this is the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. At the same time, his father ran after him, but he just couldn't catch him. He wound up in the forest somewhere, Shukadeva Goswami. And his father understood that this is the best person to give the Srimad Bhagavatam. He had some of his students go into the forest, and every day they'd start reciting some verses from Bhagavatam. And after a while, Shukadeva Goswami became attracted to the verses, and he followed Vyasadeva's students back home, and then Vyasadeva said, well, this is just a few verses, would you like to hear the whole thing? And Shukadeva Goswami said, yes. So he sat there and heard the Srimad Bhagavatam. And obviously he had a good memory, because then he was able to, for 7 days and seven nights, recite that Bhagavatam to Krishna Maharaj. And that's what we have, this part of that Bhagavatam. Because if we look at our Bhagavatam, it's not only Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, but it's also Vidura hearing from Maitreya, and Sukhi Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. There's many stories within stories. Exactly what part of it is, I guess it's all coming from Shukadeva Goswami, but just in different ways. Text 9.
Oh, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened persons.
Okay.
That very Srimad Bhagavatam I shall recite before you, because you are the most sincere devotee of Lord Krishna. One who gives full attention and respect to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam attains unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, the giver of salvation.
So here it says, the spiritual master, Srimad Bhagavatam is recognized as Vedic wisdom.
From the beginning?
Yeah.
Srimadasatam recognized Vedic wisdom, and the system of receiving Vedic knowledge is called Avaroha Tantra, or the process of receiving transcendental knowledge through bona fide cyclic succession. For advancement of material knowledge, there is a need for personal ability and research and aptitude. But in case of spiritual knowledge, all progress depends more or less on the mercy of the spiritual master. The spiritual master must be satisfied with the disciple. Only then is knowledge automatically manifest before the student of spiritual science. The process should not, however, be misunderstood to be something like magical feats, whereby the spiritual master acts like a magician and injects spiritual knowledge into his disciple, as if surcharging him with an electric current. Bona fide spiritual master reasonably explains everything to the disciple on the authorities of Vedic wisdom. The disciple can receive such teachings not exactly intellectually, but by submissive inquiries and a service attitude. The idea is that both the spiritual master and the disciple must be bona fide.
That's good. So what does it mean bona fide?
Real.
Yeah. But in this case, what is the qualification for the spiritual master to be bona fide?
He must be transparent with the knowledge.
Yes. He has to represent the simple succession. And for the disciple to be bona fide?
He must have a sincere service attitude.
Yes. He has to. The service attitude, that's the, here it says, sincere, I guess that was the other word, oh here, the most sincere devotee is the Lord. You've seen that word, you've read Nectar of Devotion, where it says that the only qualification for making spiritual advancement is sincerity. You've heard that before? That's Nectar of Devotion, I think it's around chapter 4. So what does sincerity mean? Doesn't everyone feel they're sincere? They don't feel they're not sincere? But what does sincerity actually mean?
When you're true to something.
When you what?
When you're true to something.
Yes.
You're sincere.
Sincere. But just like, for instance, if I don't follow the program every day, but I really want to become Krishna conscious, so I just can't do it, I don't follow it. Can I say I'm really sincere? Sometimes you've heard that you know, it's not really what you do probably that counts, it's how sincere you are. Krishna knows how sincere you are. Is that right? What about someone who follows the whole program, but they feel quite proud about it, that I'm really sincere and these other people have no sincerity, because otherwise they'd be doing exactly what I'm doing. Is that sincerity? Yeah. Why not?
Because we cannot judge about other devotees when they cannot, perhaps there is a reason that they cannot follow the program, and we cannot think that we are the doer, that we are so great and to be proud about following the program.
Okay. But what about, is the person who doesn't follow the program, are they sincere? Can they be sincere?
Yeah. In some ways.
In which way?
What a handful of others in here is that?
Yeah, so for whatever extent that we can follow, then to that extent we're sincere. Of course, following the program means ultimately we have to come to the platform of Christian consciousness. But the rules and regulations, if you help us do that, and if we follow them, then to that extent we're sincere. So everyone is sincere to whatever extent they're submissively hearing and trying to follow. But we shouldn't think ourselves to be too sincere, because then we'll become proud. And once we become proud, then it says that pride cometh before the fall. But at least here, Shri Goswami is telling Maharaj Parikshit that you're a sincere devotee. Of course, if the devotee here is that he's sincere, I had one devotee in my temple who was around 19. I was a temple president in one temple in 1972, I think. And he wouldn't do anything. He refused to do anything. The only thing he would do is cook prasadam and eat it himself. He made all these elaborate preparations and he'd eat them himself. And I complained that he should go out and book distribution with the rest of us, because the whole temple would go out and book distribution every day. And he'd say, no, that's all he could do is cook prasadam and eat it himself. And when I complained, he showed me a letter from Prabhupada where Prabhupada said he was sincere, he was a sincere devotee. So he said, it doesn't matter what you say, Prabhupada says I'm sincere. Needless to say, I became quite disturbed, angry at that time. It took me the whole day practically to come back to my normal consciousness. And come back and to be there eating prasadam, being very sincere. But eventually he did leave. He was sincere, he liked prasadam.
Why didn't he give it to anyone else?
I guess he was too difficult to make so much prasadam. Sometimes I think some of the devotees got some. He didn't give anything to me though, he didn't like me very much. So I was too much of a controller. Text 11 is quite famous. Next verse. Sanskrit.
Who came constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities in the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, and also those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, as well as those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge.
This is quite a long purport, we'll have time to go over it. But here, again, this is the first chapter in this Vihila Canto, and more or less the glories of hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna are being delineated. That Purusha Maharaj is in front of all the sages who have given him so many different types of advice what to do, and Shukadeva Goswami is summarizing that you don't really have to follow anything else except to hear, chant, and remember Krishna, and then everything else will be included in that. Text 12.
What is the value of the long life which is based on the experience by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest.
Purusha Maharaj is about to leave his body in 7 days, so Shukadeva Goswami wants to encourage him that you shouldn't feel bad that you're about to leave your body in 7 days, because even if you live for hundreds of thousands of years, what is the value of such a long life if it's not Krishna conscious? If you utilize your time for Krishna consciousness, then it'll be valuable, even though it's only 7 days. And now he gives an example.
The saintly king, Kadvanga, after being informed that the duration of his life would be only a moment more, at once freed himself from all material activities and took shelter of the supreme safety, the personality of Godhead.
Kadvanga Maharaj, he only had one moment left. The Purusha Maharaj has 11 days left. Take shelter of Krishna. Yes. Okay.
Perhaps another verse is by this limited to 7 more days. And during this time, we can report all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of the best life.
Text 15. At the last stage of life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, But one must cut off all attachments to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. Not only one has to hear about Krishna, but at the same time, one has to become detached from material conceptions, please. Living entity is eternal, and therefore his desires, which are natural for a living being, are also eternal. One cannot therefore stop desiring, but the subject matter for desires can be changed. So one must develop the desires for returning home, back to Godhead, and automatically the desires for material gain, material honor, and material popularity will diminish in proportion to the development of devotional service. So this will be explained later on, this profit, adoration, distinction. A living being is meant for service activities, and his desire to center around such a service attitude. Beginning from the top executive head of the state, down to the insignificant pauper in the street, all are rendering some sort of service to others. Perfection of such service attitude is only attained simply by transferring the desire of service from matter to spirit, or from Satan to God. So the service attitude will be explained. Chapter goes on, and even in the meditation on the universal form of Krishna, the Rakarusha, still one has to maintain a service attitude. That service attitude means that this material world doesn't belong to us, nor are we here, nor is it here for our enjoyment, but we have some position of utilizing material nature in the service of the Supreme, whatever we may think of Supreme nature. Text 16.
One should leave home and practice self-control in the sacred place he should be regularly and sit down in the lonely place where he sanctified.
The Lord Chaitanya here says in the verse, somewhere in that purport, Lord Chaitanya said that the highest perfection of life is to achieve the transcendent loving service of Krishna. So service to Krishna has two aspects. One is that it's transcendental. One can't have its attachment to a service attitude to the material world. The other is loving. Because Brahman is also transcendental. It's beyond material energy. But there's no reciprocation of love between two people in the platform of Brahman. As long as one is attached to the material nature, one can't be transcendental. And as long as one is not aware of Krishna, there's no question of loving service. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that's the highest perfection of life, is to achieve that platform of transcendental loving service to Krishna. And somewhere it says in it, and you'll see it, because questions and answers about Krishna elevate one to that transcendental position, the questions of Maharaj Pariksit about Krishna philosophy are greatly glorified. 7 minutes on this. Maharaj Krishna wants to absorb his mind completely in Krishna, and such absorption can be effected simply by hearing about the uncommon activities of Krishna. The activities of Krishna are not different from Krishna himself. As long as one is engaged in hearing such transcendental activities of Krishna, he remains aloof from the conditional life and material existence. Similarly, Krishna Katha or talks of Krishna is so pure that wherever they are spoken, the place, the hearer, and the inquirer, the speaker and all concerned became purified. Maybe in a different verse. In any case, that still holds true. So the idea is that, where it says here in this particular verse, the method is that one should have the whole process is to drag the mind from material engagements and fix it on the lotus feet of the Lord. The simple process alone will help one advance to the highest stage of spiritual success. Now, what we've explained is more or less an impersonal method of meditation. But at least the advantage of this is that as long as one remains attached to material circumstances, then it's very hard to fix the mind on Krishna or on anything higher. If one is always worried about the bills, always worried about the family, always worried about so many things, then it's very hard to think about Krishna. Therefore, there is a mechanical process of leaving home, etc. Because no one would think of doing that nowadays. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that vanaprastha retirement doesn't need to go into the forest. Because if you went to the forest around Europe, some hunter during hunting season would probably just shoot. Or if you went to the forest, you'd find so many people are camping out in the forest. You wouldn't be alone anyhow. Having barbecues and playing rock music, you'd be quite disturbed if you go into the forest nowadays. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that going to the forest principally means to retire to a holy place and there hear and chant about Krishna. That's vanaprastha. That's what's recommended to say, not to take, because it's exactly this process as will be explained. If you hear, when we hear about the process of vanaprastha in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it describes about the different vanas and ashrams, Narayana Muni explains to Yudhisthira Maharaj that vanaprastha is much more difficult than any sannyasi could do nowadays. You go into the forest, you wear clothes made of bark, you don't brush your teeth, you don't shave your face, you don't clean your hair, you don't wash your hair, you eat the leaves or the fruits that fall from the tree, you adore the heat, the cold, the rain, you don't cover yourself when it's raining, when it's cold outside you don't put any extra clothing on, when it's too hot outside. Instead, if it's very cold, Then you go into the nearest lake, which is almost frozen, you cut a hole in the ice, and then you go into the hole at night and you chant your Hare Krishna mantra. And during the summer, when it's extremely hot, 50, 55 degrees in the summer, then you build fires all around you, just to make it a little warmer. And then you chant. So what's the idea behind it? That you're so frustrated that why is it that all this austerity? Why, especially heat and cold, why go through that austerity? Yes?
To become detached from the body concept.
Yes, but why specifically? Going to the water during the winter with your head just sticking out of the ice. You know that story where the yogi made a bet with this wealthy person that in the middle of the night in the winter I can stay in a hole above the ice. I'll cut a hole in the ice and then put my body into it and all night I'll just stay there. And the wealthy merchant said, yes, good. So he did that. During the middle of the night, he cut a hole in the ice, and he went into the ice water and stayed there the whole night. And next day he asked for he had won the wager, and he wanted the money. But the wealthy merchant, he said, I'm not giving you any money, because I know that 2 kilometers away, someone had a candle. He was burning a candle, and I know about your mystic power, yogi power, you were taking heat from the candle. And therefore it was unfair, you were getting extra heat. So the yogi was quite disturbed, but the wealthy man's servant was more clever. The next day he was supposed to cook the wealthy man's meal. And the wealthy man had a very important appointment, so he said, hurry up and finish cooking. No, he said, I'm almost done, it's going to take a little while longer. And then the wealthy man said, well, why isn't it done? He came into the kitchen and he saw that his servant was trying to cook the meal with a candle, a little bit of candlelight. He said, well, how can you get any heat from this candle? It's impossible. He said, but according to you, the yogi, he was able to warm up his body and he was in ice water for the whole night. And according to you, he was able to get enough heat from his candle 2 kilometers away. So certainly this amount of heat from this candle should be able to cook your meal. And the wealthy man understood that he was being deceptive, and therefore he gave the wager to the yogi, that he made. In other words, at the time of death, when we have to leave this body, the body becomes extremely cold. First of all, it becomes extremely warm, hot, intolerably hot, and then it becomes intolerably cold, and then the soul has to leave the body. So that time is very disturbing. You know, to practice, be undisturbed even in the midst of extreme heat or extreme cold, which one will encounter at the time of leaving the body, then one practices that type of austerity. But why don't we practice that austerity? Because we wouldn't have any devotees. Why don't we practice that austerity? Because we used to practice it, at least when I was younger. We used to go up when I was distributing books in Buffalo, New York, in winter. It was practically the same. It was so cold that we would get down to like, here it would be 30 degrees below zero, 20 degrees below zero, and the snow. And the devotees would go on book distribution in dhotis and saris, because that's all we had. That's all we knew was dhotis and saris. And it would be quite cold. But that was not very popular. In other words, as soon as we got enough money and enough intelligence, then we actually got some clothes to wear. So what is our method? What are we trying to do in order to counteract the extreme, well, extremities of the time leaving the body that we were able to tolerate them? Does anyone know?
Fixing the mind on Krishna.
Yes. Of course, our understanding of fixing the mind on Krishna sounds rather austere. Fix the mind, pow, pow, because we nail it on Krishna. But our fixing the mind on Krishna means that if one is not sufficiently advanced, then one enters into the spiritual platform of consciousness. So much so that one becomes unaware of what's happening on this material plane. Not completely unaware, but one can enter into a state when one is unaffected by it. The extremity, the perfection of that, is, as I mentioned the other yesterday, is in the Madhurya Kandambini. When the devotee is so much in prema, so much in love with Krishna, that at the time of leaving his body, he doesn't know whether he has a body or not. He's unaware of the fact that he left his body. The only thing he's aware of is that Krishna, his virtual Lord, is leading him back to his home in the spiritual world. So that's the perfection. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that during the day, he would be eating, he'd be bathing, he'd be doing his regular activities, but he was even unaware of his body. He had his spiritual body. He'd be so much absorbed in remembering Krishna that he was unaware of even his spiritual body, with the speed of ourselves. Text 17, so now we're hearing about a process that Shukadeva Goswami is explaining to Maharaj Parikshit of becoming detached from material existence. He's already said that if you become a devotee of Krishna, as you already are, that every all perfection will be there. But there are other people who are not devotees who are present there, so how do they make progress? This is explained here. Next verse.
After sitting in the above manner, make the mind remember the three transcendental letters, Om, and by regulating the breathing process, control the mind so as not to forget the transcendental seed.
And the purpose is mind or desire cannot be stopped. You see that? Round 6.
Oh, mind or desire cannot be stopped, but to develop the desire to function for spiritual realization, the quality of engagement by the mind has to be changed. The mind is the pivot of the active sense organs, and as such, if the quality of thinking, feeling, and willing is changed, naturally the quality of actions by the instrumental senses will also change. Omkara is the seed of all transcendental sound, and it is only the transcendental sound which can bring about the desired change of the mind and the senses.
Excellent. What's the difference between Omkara and Krishna?
Nothing.
I mean, sometimes we do emphasize the oneness, but we don't chant Om Kara, Om Kara, Om Om Kara, Kara Kara. So there must be some difference. The similarity of the Om Kara is the same as Krishna in one sense. Our acharyas have broken down Om Kara as A U M, A meaning Krishna, U meaning Srimati Radharani, and meaning the living entities. But what is the difference between them? Why is it that the impersonalists, they'll chant Omkara, but they won't chant Krishna? No, not necessarily, but it could be. Because it's in other words, Omkara is just like a formal address. For instance, you can say, the king is coming. The king is a formal designation for a particular person. The king may have a name, you know, Charles. You could say, Charles is coming. But a more formal way of saying it is, the king is coming. The king and Charles are not different, but still, Charles is more personal. If the king's, you know, children, they don't say the king is coming, they say Charlie's coming. But if one of the king's subjects goes up to the king and says, hey Charlie, what's happening? It may not be appreciated. So Om is a more formal address to Krishna. But persons. You see where it says but persons?
But persons who are unable to realize the transcendental personal form or name of the Lord on account of their imperfect senses, in other words, neophytes, are trained to the practice of self-realization by this mechanical process of regulating the breathing function and simultaneously repeating the prayabha omkara within the mind.
That's good.
Okay?
Then the next thing you can read is dot 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 the devotees.
Who's that?
So the devotees around fourth line, fourth from the bottom. So that's
The devotees directly fix their minds on the person of absolute truth. But one who is able to accommodate such personal features of the absolute is disciplined in personality to train the mind to make further progress.
Prabhupada's contrasting, although it's going to explain the indirect method here, the Prabhupada keeps on reminding us that we don't really have to go through it. This is being given to show how the impersonality or the universal conception is also part of Krishna consciousness. That there's the indirect process and the direct process. Krishna Maharaj has advised about the indirect process, so he'll explain it, but he'll explain the superiority of the direct process. Text 18.
Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities and by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness.
So this is Prabhupada's purport. Now, where in the verse is the same thing about Krishna? Then we see in the verse. So niyachet, withdraw, vishayedya, from sense enjoyment, akshan, the senses, manasa, by the mind, buddhi, intelligence, sarati, the driver, manaha, the mind, karmavir, by fruit of work, akshita, being absorbed in, shubha arte, for the sake of the Lord. So how you get for the sake of the Lord. Shubha arte. So shubha means pious. And arte means engagement. So Prabhupada translates that as for the sake of the Lord. Only Prabhupada translates that text. In other words, you can't really, Krishna is not really mentioned there, but Prabhupada understands what the verse is really aiming at, and he includes it in there. That the real pious activity is ultimately to become Krishna conscious. That's the most pious activity. Otherwise, how did we jump from going, leaving home, sitting down in meditation, trying to withdraw the senses and the mind from material activities, and then suddenly Prabhupada puts in, mind becoming too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. But it doesn't seem like this person is exactly aware of God, what to speak of trying to fix the mind upon it. But Prabhupada puts that in for our sake. And it says, if performed under proper guidance, you see that? This is also, this is one of our...
Oh, yeah. If performed under proper guidance, that is the surest path of progress, even for the disturbing mind.
Disturbed mind. So even our minds are disturbed, that if we follow the process, then gradually our minds will become less disturbed, and so they become fixed on Krishna. Next text.
The arctic melted from the rim of this moon, one after another, without being deviated from the conception of the complete body. Thus the mind becomes freed from all sense objects. There should be no other thing to be thought upon, because the supreme personality of body vision is the ultimate truth, the mind becomes completely
Okay. So here it says, therefore a neophyte's concentration is around the middle of the purport. Therefore a neophyte's it's around 11
Therefore, a neophyte's concentration on meditation upon the limbs of Vishnu and the temple, as contemplated in the revealed scriptures, is an easy opportunity for meditation for persons who are unable to sit down tightly at one place and then concentrate upon pranava omkara for the limbs of the body of Vishnu, as recommended herein by Shukadeva Goswami, the great authority.
That's good. Okay, next.
The common man can benefit more by meditating on the form of Vishnu in the temple than on the omkara, the spiritual combination of A, U, M, as explained before. There is no difference between omkara and the forms of Vishnu. But persons unacquainted with the science of absolute truth try to create dissension by differentiating between the forms of Vishnu and that of omkara. Here it is indicated that the Vishnu form is the ultimate goal of meditation, and as such, it is better to concentrate upon the forms of Vishnu than on impersonal omkara. The latter process is also more difficult than the former.
Two things to mention is, one is that omkara is more difficult to perform than meditation. The other is that one is personal, the other is impersonal. That you can't love omkara. You don't find people falling in love with omkara, describing how beautiful omkara. But people chant it, and they get it is a transcendental sound vibration. Otherwise, people wouldn't chant it. And you can keep on, because it is transcendental, one can repeatedly chant omkara and not get tired of chanting it. But one will not fall in love with omkara. Although, if one learns that omkara and Krishna are not different, then by chanting omkara, one can also remember Krishna. But just by chanting Krishna, by knowing about Krishna consciousness, we can know that omkara is also the sound representation of Krishna. But generally, those who don't know about Krishna consciousness, they won't realize Krishna by chanting omkara. Only the devotees will. Next.
One's mind is always agitated by the passionate mind of material nature and bewildered by the ignorant mind of nature. But one can rectify such conceptions by the relation of Vishnu and thus become pacified by cleansing the dirty things created by them.
Is it only persons?
Only persons conducted by the mode of goodness can have the knowledge of the Supreme Truth. Effects of the mode.
So, one has to come to the mode of goodness if one wants to gain knowledge of Krishna. Everything created by the material energy can be dovetailed. See that? Everything. Pure devotee of the Lord.
Pure devotee of the Lord knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by the surface attitude, and only in that devotional way can the theory of pantheism be perfected.
Everything created by the material energy can be dovetailed with the absolute truth by an attitude of service, which is the central part of living energy. That's also that. So we have to come to the mode of goodness, and the way of coming to the mode of goodness is by developing a service attitude to Krishna. Because the more we develop a service attitude towards Krishna, then the more Krishna reveals himself, and then he automatically becomes the mode of goodness in Krishna's association. It's like we're putting an iron to the fire, the iron gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it takes on the same quality that the fire has. So similarly, by association with Krishna and his devotees, by the process of remembering them or meditating on them or Krishna revealing himself to us, then we become just like fire, because they are transcendental to even the mode of goodness. So associating with them means that we become spiritualized. Text 21.
Okay, by this system of remembrance and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Lord, one can nourish and attain devotional service of the Lord under his direct charges.
Success in this process and this performances.
Such mystic performances is achieved only by the help of the devotional attitude. Pantheism, or the system of feeling the presence of the Almighty everywhere, is a sort of training of the mind to become accustomed to the devotional conception. And it is this devotional attitude of the mystic that makes possible the successful termination of such mystic attempts.
That's good. And then, after that, there's a devotional atmosphere.
The devotional atmosphere created by such pantheistic vision develops into devotional service in later days, and that is the only benefit for the impersonator.
Yes. In other words, here what's being described is a pantheistic vision of things, and that develops a change of attitude. Although it doesn't directly connect one with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, but it gives one a different attitude towards things. It gives one a more respectful attitude towards this world that we sit. In other words, if one starts thinking that everything is God, we've heard that before, you know, everything, because people don't take that very seriously. But there is kind of a mood sometimes that people have that, you know, everything is God. They go out in nature and they see the sun rising, they, oh, how beautiful, etc., etc. So that develops a kind of an appreciative attitude rather than a lording it over attitude. So that by that change of attitude, then one becomes qualified to, in the future, if one is fortunate enough to come in contact with a devotee, take up the process of devotional service. On the other hand, if someone walks into the forest and he's in the mode of ignorance, then everywhere he looks, he'll see a place to sleep. If one is in the mode of passion, then everywhere one will look, he'll try and figure out if he buys this amount of land, cuts down all the trees, and builds an apartment here, he'll make so much money from the trees, and he'll get so much money profit from building the apartments, that everywhere he looks as an opportunity to make some money. Person in the mode of goodness, he walks into the forest, he'll hear the birds chirping, and see that spring and the smell of flowers. And so his experience of the forest is different from a person who is in ignorance and passion. And that comes about by hearing from more or less a pantheistic attitude, how the birds are divine and the flowers are divine and everything is divine. So that attitude is certainly better than ignorant and passionate, which will keep one in it. Which a devotee comes along and gives someone a book. So a person in ignorance will think, well, this maybe I'll buy the book because it looks like it'll make a good pillow. But it's a little hard, so I don't know if I'll. And a person in passion is thinking that if I rip out all the papers and I try and sell them, would I make a profit? How much is he charging me for the book? If I recycle the book and get some money back for it, how much will I make from it? So he may not buy the book because the book seems too expensive to him. But if he's in the mode of goodness, then he may think, well, this is something that's, you know, spiritual, maybe I should find out about. Development of a pantheistic or that type of attitude, you know, we're all divine. Then when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they're more likely to appreciate it because they have, it's closer to their mentality. Krishna consciousness is so sublime that those in the mode of ignorance and passion can rarely appreciate it. For those who have a little tinge of goodness, they can relate to it in some way, understand its value. Just like for those who do book distribution, sometimes you'll find that the people who are vegetarians are generally more receptive to Christian consciousness. But when you meet someone who's a Christian or, you know, who's a born-again meat eater, really, or you meet a butcher on the street, what kind of work do you do? So I'm a butcher, I love killing animals, then you may realize that this selling them a book may be more difficult, although it is possible, but it may not be so much that the butcher may relate to.
Now, this is ask, what's the mystic performances?
That they do?
Yes. Is the success of mystic performances, what is it exactly?
They sit down and they don't do anything. Quite mystical.
Rather than the mystics, they go to the moon, so how can this be tied up with the devotional attitude?
No, this is not the type of mystic. This is, they just leave home, they go into the forest and they sit, and they contemplate the forest. Mystic means, it doesn't mean necessarily mystic power. This is a different type of thing. Mystic means it's just something beyond the ordinary. Because mystic means, just like even mystic power, we all have mystic power. If you cut your finger, even without doing anything, it heals. So that's mystic power. But when one becomes further advanced in austerity, then what happens is that when is able to connect with Krishna, connect the consciousness with Krishna, then it becomes more apparent exactly how to do different, manipulate the material energy in different ways. And therefore one can learn things like how to levitate, one can learn how to prati siddhi, things like that. Because those things are already there, we're just not aware of how to do it. But those things can be developed by the process of austerity. Right now our minds are clouded, so we don't see these things. But when the mind becomes unclouded by advancement of austerity or whatever, the cultivation of knowledge, then one becomes aware of exactly how to achieve certain types of power, which is more or less, most of these things are just manipulations of prana. Concentration of prana and manifesting it. Just like nowadays they have this Reiki. You've heard of Reiki before. So we already have mystic power. You can hold your hands together like that. What's that?
If there's a form of
meditation, yeah, you feel this. So that energy is actually just prana. Yes.
When you gave the example of when you cut the finger, yeah, it heals. We don't heal it though, do we?
No. Nor do we manipulate prana either. She said.
She's doing it automatically.
Yeah, the material nature is such that it.
So that's the mystic.
Yeah, because we don't know how it's done.
Yeah.
Therefore it seems mystical to us. For us, for instance, we can do things that to other living entities seems quite mystical. How, you know, you take a gun, you shoot at the animal, he can't figure out how you did it. Because he can't do it. So for him it's a mystic power. I mean, if you were, say, an elephant, and someone came by with this little stick, and they bang, bang, and I'm dead, it would be quite mystical, wouldn't it? This person would... Because the elephant can't do it, so to the elephant it's quite mystical. Or how human beings can go in an airplane and fly in the sky. That's also mystic power. So by the same manipulation of the material nature, even without the airplane, the mystics can fly. But they know how they're doing it. They at least know the technique of getting the mystic power. Because they know how the material nature works. And the scientists, they've discovered by looking at the birds. Birds, they also know how the material nature works to some degree. They flap their wings and they take off. So mystic power is nothing but an insight, more than we have, into how the material nature works and how to utilize it to manipulate it in a certain way. But this type of mystic power that's being explained here is simply a change of consciousness. From seeing the material world in a certain way, you learn a technique to see the material world in a different way. Because as long as we have this lauding and over attitude towards material nature, we're going to be in anxiety. Thinking about the bills and thinking about the family, thinking about our body, our future, lamenting about all the mistakes we made in the past. If I had a chance again, I could do it all over and everything would be so much better now. So that's the type of lamentation, hankering. So the mystic goes into the forest, wherever he goes, sits there and becomes peaceful. So that's also mystical. And Prabhupada was asked, can you show us the mystic power? Then he showed his followers and disciples, and he said, this is not my mystic power. Previously they were engaged in all kinds of sinful activities, and now, he said, they didn't even believe in God, they would never go to church, they had no spiritual life, but now they're, as he writes in the Krishna book, now they're shaved off and they look like Vaikuntha with tilak and their neck beads and shaven heads, and they look like dancing peacocks. Jubilant, they're jubilant like dancing peacocks. So that's my mystic power. Who else had such mystic power? Vinara. And that mystic power is much more valuable than, say, producing some ashes out of your hand.
Or flying like Sai Baba.
What's that?
Or flying like Sai Baba.
Sai Baba flies?
Yes, and being from the other in heaven.
What's that?
He flies with Air India.
Yeah. Well, if he was any better, he'd probably fly with British Airways. Text 22. This is the last one we'll do.
The person of the Bhagavad inquired the Buddhist said, all Brahman, please describe in full detail how and where the mind has to give life and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed.
So this is what, to remove those anxieties we have in our mind, that's quite advantageous. And Brahma's purport, he writes, he is actually
meant to serve the will of the Supreme Lord, but on account of the dirt things in the heart, he likes to serve his concocted desires. These desires, instead of giving him any peace of mind, create new problems and thus bind him to the cycle of repeated birth and death. These dirty things of pretty work and appearing philosophy can be removed only by association with the Supreme Lord. The Lord, being omnipotent, can offer his association by his inconceivable potencies. Thus persons who are unable to pin their faith on the personal feature of the Absolute are given a chance to associate with his great Rupa or the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord.
That's good. Well, we'll hear that Virata Rupa is only an imaginary form, that Krishna doesn't really have a material body. Just like our conception that this body is us is also an imagination. Not that the body is not real, not that we're not real, but our identification with the body is unreal. So certainly, identification with Krishna, with his universal form, is also unreal. But the fact is that Krishna is, by his potencies, manifesting this particular form, cause of creations. And if someone meditates on it, the idea that this is the supreme, then the mind becomes, to some degree at least, purified by developing a service attitude. Service attitude doesn't mean that, you know, you can't put a garland on the universal form. You can't bathe the universal form. But the service attitude, at least as much as not trying to lord it over the universal form, in the sense that, you know, cutting down trees in its forest or polluting its waters, whatever, at least some reverence towards the energies, thinking that they're divine or godly, and therefore I must utilize them properly. So that's the service attitude. Development, at least a dormant, a developing that kind of service attitude. Since the potent, the dirty things of fruit of work, since the potent, you see that?
Since the potent and potencies are identical, even the conception of this impersonal cosmic creature of the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord act indirectly and thus gradually rise to the stage of personal contact.
Yes, that's good. And then it says, but he inquired after a detailed description
of the matter for the benefit of others who are unable to conceive of the transcendental personal feature of the Lord as the form of eternity, knowledge and wisdom. An undevoted class of man cannot think of the personal feature of the Lord. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, the personal form of the Lord, like Ram or Krishna, is completely revolting to them. They have a poor estimation of the potency of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.11, it is explained by the Lord himself that people with poor fund of knowledge deride the Supreme Personality of the Lord, taking him to be a common man. Such men are ignorant of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. By the inconceivable potency of the Lord, he can move in human society or any other society of living beings, and yet remain the same omnipotent Lord, without deviating in the slightest from his transcendental position. So for the benefit of men who are unable to accept the Lord in his personal eternal form, Maharaj Pariksit inquired of Shukadeva Swami how to fix the mind on him in the beginning, and the Goswami replied in detail as follows.
Okay, so we'll stop here until 5:12, or actually 12 o'clock. Thank you. Especially here in Belgium. You only hear about it, rumors about the sun appearing once in a while. Most people here in Belgium don't believe it. We're up to 23. Who's next?
Just me.
She knows.
Shukadeva Goswami answered, one should control the sitting posture, regulate the breathing process by the yogic pranayama, and thus control the mind and senses, and with intelligence apply the mind to the gross potencies of the Lord called the Virat Rupa.
Although I have many notes here, but I think we're just going to go on. The yoga process is a process which is applicable for any kind of meditation. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara. These apply to anyone who's trying to engage in any form of meditation. The sitting postures, align in life areas in a way that they become pacified. And then pranayama further is a subtle way of pacifying the life areas in the body. We become disturbed or agitated in the mind and the senses because the life areas don't flow properly in the body. So ātiyāma, niyāma, āsana, pranayama, they pacify them. And then there's pratyahara. Pratyahara means that you can learn a technique by which they further become pacified in the life areas in the body. So you can get further pacify your calm, and then you can start thinking dharana, dhyana, and finally when there's no more agitation, that's called samadhi. And so in Hindu, that one has to fix the mind upon something. The yogic meditation fixes the mind upon the form of Vishnu, just like we also fix the mind upon Krishna in the temple, or we can fix the mind upon things about Krishna, hearing about his name, form, quality, and pastimes. We're even hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam is another way of fixing the mind upon Krishna. If we didn't eat too much prasadam, we don't feel sleepy. Or we didn't eat too little, so we feel hungry. So therefore, the mind is peaceful enough, you can actually start thinking about just hearing. And by hearing, we should be able to form images of what's being talked about. We'll go over that today when we chant the bhajans. That we actually are trying to form images, we're trying to meditate, but we're trying to meditate in terms of what the scriptures are saying. So we should form images that we try to see through the eyes of the scriptures. And the more we can see through the eyes of the scriptures, then the more we actually see. Because it's not much to see when you're talking about a yogi sitting there in a yoga posture, but later on, or by a more full description of what yoga pranayama is, that we can see it's just a way of pacifying the breath that's already there. We're already breathing. Generally, we don't breathe very much. We're not even aware of the different types of prana that circulates in the body. There's prana, apana, jnana, udana, and samana. So these are the principal. There's also five other energies like for kukorma and others. But these are just air circulating in the body, and when they're circulating properly, we're healthy. When they're circulating not so nicely, then we feel tired, we get constipated, we get diarrhea, or we get a headache, whatever else. We get disturbed by the lack of proper flow of the air in the body. But yoga helps to just regulate them, to get them flowing in the right direction, in the right speed, etc. Then the mind becomes peaceful and can think about that this material nature is divine. Next one. Okay. I'm missing someone here, I feel.
God.
Who's next?
You said that the manifestation of the phenomenal yoga as a whole is first the body of the Absolute Truth. When the universe is in such a spot, that's the energy of the Absolute Truth.
Fully cognizant Lord has his transcendental eyes, heads, and other bodily parts distributed everywhere. Can you read that? Can you find that? It starts with the omnipotent Lord has his transcendental eyes.
Next page.
Next page.
To the top.
The very top of the page.
Anything I need to express question?
The omnipotent Lord has his transcendental eyes, heads, and other bodily parts distributed everywhere.
You can see the terms that is relentless in time from anywhere that ends up, but he's present everywhere in the supernatural world and in the supernatural world. Although he is in particular world, he has to be God. His earthly world is also his phenomenal representation. But it is nothing but expansion of energy. Whatever you think about it, it has energy, it mixes with everyone. It has just sun as well as suspended element and the rays of the sun are not different from the sun, but except for this expansion of the sun.
That's good. That is all Krishna's energy in a real way, although it seems that Rasa Purusha meditation is artificial, imaginary, but it's real also, because everything is Krishna's energy. And the less we try to control it and enjoy it, the more we become aware that it is spiritual. Verse 25. Akash, is that right?
Yes. The gigantic universal form of the personality of Godhead within the body of the universal shell, which is covered by seven material elements, is the subject for the Vira conception.
So, and then it says the next page, the Virat Rupa was exhibited by the Lord just to give lessons.
Cannot conceive of the Lord as appearing just like a human being. That he factually has the potency of his claim to be the supreme absolute person without any rival or superior. Materialistic men can think, although very imperfectly, of the huge universal space.
Eighth line from God, to the rock whistles deal exhibit.
The materialistic person may concentrate his mind upon the Virat or gigantic form of the Lord.
Eight lines from the bottom, the Virat whistle is deal exhibit.
Okay.
From the bottom.
The Virat Rupa was particularly exhibited by the Lord just to give lessons to such foolish men, so that one can accept the person as the incarnation of Godhead. Only if a person is able to exhibit such a Virat Rupa as Lord Krishna did, the materialistic person may concentrate his mind upon the Virat or gigantic form of the Lord in his own interest. And as recommended by Shukadeva Goswami, but he must be on his guard not to be misled by pretenders who claim to be the identical person as Lord Krishna, but are not able to act like him or exhibit the Virat Rupa. Comprehending the whole of the universe.
Somewhere another little thing here. The materialist has no concern that his visualization of the world in a spirit of lording over is not God realization. Materialistic view of exploitation of material resources is occasioned by the illusion of the external energies of Lord. And as such, if anyone wants to realize the supreme truth by conceiving of the universal form of the Lord, he must cultivate the service attitude. Unless the service attitude is revived, the conception of Virat realization will have little effect on the seer. The idea that people are God conscious or they believe in God, but that's not really very true, at least. As long as one is cultivating this attitude of lording it over material nature, how can you believe in God and at the same time think oneself to be a competitor of God? Is that possible? In other words, if God is a person who is the proprietor and controller of everything, but you're trying to figure out how you're going to control everything, then it's a contradiction. Without the attitude of surrender to the controller, one will think oneself to be the controller. If one is proclaiming oneself to be, we're doing this, God has told us to do it, or whatever else, we're doing this in the spirit of serving God, we're the chosen people, whatever it is. But if one is in the mood that I'm the Lord and I'm in control for my enjoyment, and the guy is just an instrument to help me control and enjoy here, but that's not a very real sense of God consciousness. So even the person who gives up, the more one gives up that sense of lordship and control and enjoying independently from God, then the more it's actually God consciousness. Is that clear? Well, it seems very enthusiastic about that. It's depressing. Okay, 26.
Persons who have realized it have studied that the planets known as Patala constitute the bottoms of the feet of the universal Lord, and the heels and the toes are the Rasatala planets. The ankles are the Mahatala planets, and his shanks constitute the Talala planets.
Talala
planets.
27.
The knees of the universal form are the planetary system of the name Sutala, and the two thighs are the Vitala and Atala planetary systems. The hips are Mahitala, and outer space is the depression of his navel.
So think about that. Outer space is the depression of his navel. What's that? You can't understand it. So simple and clear.
Really?
No. No, this is quite a... That's why it's mystical.
Yeah, it's like here.
When you get depressed. No! Depression. It's a depression. Still. No, still trying to figure out how outer space and the depression is navel. He must have a big navel.
I'll get it now.
I still haven't got it. Still, I mean, these things are supposed to be a little mystical. They're not supposed to be so easy to figure out. Otherwise, someone would sit there after 5 minutes, figure it out, and, you know, figure out, then try and think what's the next thing to do. So they sit there for, you know, 20 years trying to figure out how the outer space is the depression of the Lord's navel. And finally they realize it's, wow, doesn't make any sense. At least they've been doing mischief for 10 years, don't they? Next one. Kind of.
The jet of the original...
Oh, the maize color. Could you read?
The jet of the original personality of the gigantic form of the luminary planetary system. His neck is the Maha, then his mouth is the Janas planet, and his forehead is the Tapas planetary system. The topmost planetary system known as Sataruka is the head of he who has 1,000 heads.
But we can see that more or less the description of this part of the universal form in terms of the planets is in terms of the upper and lower planets. The lower the planet is, it's the heels, etc., etc. It's just the physical positioning of the planets.
Can I ask, what are the, how to say, the in English names for the planetary systems? Because otherwise, are these something in English?
They really aren't. They're not the generally in the we're used to the constellations have having names like Ashvini, like Aries, Taurus. We're used to those names. Those are the ones we're familiar with. And those are according to the constellations, like beginning with Kritika, Ashvini, then Varuni, then Kritika, Rohini, etc. But those are the nakshatras. They're not the Mahatala or these other planets.
But are there any names then for this?
There may be, just like the Milky Way, we have some names for them, but I'm not familiar with, like, I don't think we're aware of Brahma Loka or Jhana Loka. We're not able to perceive them from this point of view. What does it speak of Mahatala and Prasatala, etc. They're below Bhumandala, so we can't even see them from here. Next one.
His arms are the demigods covered by Indra. The ten directional sides are his ears, and physical size is his sense of hearing. His nostrils are the two Ashwini Kumaras, and the material greatness is his sense of smell. His mouth is a blazing fire.
Question.
What's the Ashwini Kumaras?
There are two demigods, or almost like demigods, but the physicians. They know the science of Ayurveda. Since, what's that?
They're twins.
Since the demigods are included, there's 29.
It's fear of outer space going through.
Since the demigods are included, please read.
Since the demigods are included in the gigantic form of the Lord, worship of the Lord, whether in his gigantic material conception or in his eternal transcendental form as Lord Sri Krishna, also appeases the demigods and all the other parts and parcels, as much as water in the root of a tree distributes energy to all of the tree's other parts. Consequently, for materials also, worship of the universal gigantic form of the Lord leads one to the right path. One need not risk being misled by approaching many demigods for fulfillment of different desires. The real entity is the Lord Himself, and all others are imaginary, for everything is included in Him only.
So, if you just do something with the scripture, then you put us in the right path. Gradually that will lead to Krishna consciousness, although it may take some time. Text 30.
The sphere of outer space constitutes his eyepits, and the eyeball is the sun as the power of seeing. His eyelids are both day and night, and in the movement of his eyebrows, the Brahma and similar supreme personalities reside. His palate is the director of water, Varuna, and the juice of essence, and the juice or essence of everything is his tongue.
What clear is it about that? 31.
They say that the many kings are the servant message of the Lord, and his jewels feed Ayama, ground of death, to banish the sinners. The art of perfection is his set deed, and the most alluring illusory material energy is his mind. His great portion of material creation is the casting of his glance over us.
Conditioned souls
who are ruled by such materialism should know that material temporary creation is simply an imitation of the reality, and that those who are captivated by such alluring vices of the Lord are put under the direction of the controller of sinners called Yamadhar. The Lord smiles affectionately and displays his teeth. The intelligent person who can grasp this truth about the Lord becomes a soul fully surrendered unto him.
Modesty is the upper portion of his lips, hankering is his chin. Religion is the breast of the Lord, and irreligion is his back. Brahmaji, who generates all living beings in the material world, is his genitals, and the Mitra Varunas are his two testicles. The ocean is his waist, and the hills and mountains are the stacks of his bones.
Okay, the rivers are the veins of the gigantic body, the trees are the nerves of his body, and the only part of the air is his breathing. The basic edges are his movements, and his activities are the reactions of the rivers of the gigantic
body. Okay. With that, amongst the lagoons, the clouds which carry water are the hairs on his head. The termination of days or nights are his stress. And the supreme cause of material creation is his intelligence. His mind is the moon. there is a war of all changes. The principle of matter, Mahaprabha, is the consciousness of the omnipresent Lord as asserted by the experts, and Rudra Deva is his ego. The horse, mule, camel and elephant are his nails, and wild animals are all the quadrupeds are situated in the belt zone of the Lord.
So I'm going to give a very clear understanding of the universal form looks like.
When I see a horse next time, I think.
Could do it in belt. Well, the other quadrupeds. Krishna line is much easier, isn't it? Because the appreciation for much more simple. Okay?
Varieties of birds are indications of his masterful artistic sense. Manu, the father of mankind, is the emblem of his standard intelligence, and humanity is his residence. The celestial species of human beings, like the Gandharvas, Vidyakaras, Charas, and angels, all represent his musical rhythm, and the demoniac soldiers are representations of his wonderful prowess.
The
Vimala Purusha's face is Brahmanas, his arms are the Kshatriyas, his thighs are the Vaishyas, his footpath are under the protection of the spirit. All the worshipable demigods are also overtaken by him, and it is the duty of everyone to perform sacrifices with beautiful goods to appease the Lord.
And the human society says that. So the right in the middle.
Mm.
Human society therefore must learn to offer sacrifices not only with clarified butter, but also with other manufactured goods in the propagation of the Lord's glory. And that will bring about perfection in human society. The intelligent class of men or Brahmanas may give direction to such sacrifices in consultation with the previous acharyas. The administrators may give all facilities to perform such sacrifices. The Vaishya class or mercantile form community to produce such goods may offer them for sacrifice, and the Shukra class may offer them manual labor for the successful termination of such sacrifice. Thus, by the cooperation of all classes of human beings, the sacrifice recommended in this age, namely the sacrifice, communication, chant of the holy name of the Lord, may be executed for the common welfare of the people of the world.
Probably, we look at this description of the quadrupeds being belt zone, Brahma being living in his, living where? What's that?
Brahmanas.
Oh, no, not the Brahmanas. There's something where it says in the Bell how Brahma and others, intelligent people, live.
Brahmanas is the intelligent class, the Shatrin Jesu, and the Shatrin.
Here it says that. Yeah, there's so many descriptions here which are quite unusual. Rudra Deva is his ego, the horse, mule, camel, and elephant. So it probably doesn't involve the commenting on it. Only when he finds that there's something that's applicable to us does he make any real comments on it. And even our acharya has obviously been this contemplation of the universal form is not so easy to do. And therefore, and nor are we supposed to do it, so the acharyas, they don't really comment on it very much. But we are supposed to perform sacrifice, and that's what they comment upon. 38?
I have thus explained to you the gross material gigantic conception of the personality of Godhead. One who seriously desires liberation concentrates his mind in this form of the Lord, because there is nothing more than this in the material world.
So this sense of God consciousness? It's very good. The last sentence.
This sense of God-mindedness will be made transcribed and challenging the existence of God. Thus one can learn to show respect to everything, for all things apart from that of the Supreme Body.
So this meditation is just meant for that, just to reduce one's pride that I'm so big and I'm so important and I'm so everything and everything depends on me. It gives one a sense of being very small. Even that humility will help one come to the right path. Text 39.
One should concentrate his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone is distributed in so many manifestations, as much as ordinary persons create thousands of manifestations in dreams. One must concentrate the mind on him, who is the only all blissful absolute truth. Otherwise one will be misled and will cause his own degradation.
So somehow or another, somewhere one has to think that there is a supreme. So even the persons who have no real consciousness of God, the sense that although they claim to be worshippers of God, if you ask them anything about God, they can't tell you very much about him. But still that's better probably said than an atheist who doesn't believe in God at all. Because that belief in God will give one a sense of humility, a sense of respect that the atheist never has, or the materialist, or atheist actually should say. So the conclusion, it says, obviously it's down some of the karma. Now we've gone over the universal form. So just to summarize, beginning Maharaj Parikshit, in the first canto, he'd ask the question, what's the duty of a person at all times in all circumstances? What does he have to do? What does he have to fix his mind upon? Especially a person who's about to die. And then Shukadeva Goswami says that this question is very good, it's glorious, it's a fine duty for everyone. Many people won't ask it if they're materialists because they're too engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. They believe that somehow or another they're going to live here forever and that their family members will protect them. But the real duty of everyone is to hear, chant, remember, and glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that the highest perfection of life is attained if one fixes the mind upon Krishna at the time of death. That even he himself, he had heard this knowledge from his father Vyasadeva, and that he had, although he was situated in transcendence, still he had become attracted to it, because the knowledge is transcendental. And then he says, Purusha Maharaj, that even at the time of death, even if one only has a few moments like Kadbanga Maharaj, still if one does this process of fixing the mind upon Krishna, it's very auspicious. And then he starts describing a methodology of leaving home, sitting in a sanctified place, performing the yoga process of regulating the bodily activities and mind, and fixing the mind upon the universal form, which is described. And we understand that this is a preliminary process, but it develops the proper mood of reverence and respect for the creation, which diminishes one's desire and feeling of lording it over in the material creation, pacifies the mind from the lamentations of one's past activities, and therefore one becomes eligible in chakra association to understand higher topics, which is described in the next chapter. But in itself, in and of itself, one can go on contemplating the cosmic creation, one won't really go anywhere or very far without good association, because it gives one a preliminary mentality by which one can take advantage of better association. Now we're going to go into the Lord of the Heart, and the Lord of the Heart is not really described. What's going to be described here, persons on this earth planet meditating on something superior. But there are other persons who have another desire. They want to go to the higher planetary system. They want to achieve a higher platform of material existence. So this will be explained here in the next chapter. Now, material existence can also, there's an elevation for higher levels of existence here, which is progress, but there's something beyond that also. And in the beginning, they'll be living simply, etc., etc. Sudhir Goswami has gone on with his presentation of simplified living, pious activities, which will ultimately elevate one further and further in material existence by purifying the mind. And then at the end of the chapter, we'll come up to the platform where we can have enough intelligence being purified from material attachment to understand the super soul in the heart. Okay, so who's next?
Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly prior to the manifestation of the suffering, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Lila Krishna, regained lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before.
And Prabhupada writes, liberation means
liberation means getting out of the slumber of forgetfulness and becoming situated in the real loving service of the Lord, as exemplified in the case of Brahma. Service of Brahma is the temple of service and liberation, distinguished from the so-called altruistic services full of mistakes and forgetfulness. Liberation is never an action, but service without human mistakes.
So what does it mean, forgetfulness of what? What does a mistake mean? Besides, there are many engineers, they build very nice buildings, so why is that a mistake? What kind of mistake are they making?
Self-purification of other people, for themselves.
They're thinking that they're gaining something, but the only thing they're gaining is karma, actually. Everything they're getting something, but all they're getting is all they're going to get is a reaction for what they're doing. So, yes, not doing something for Krishna is a mistake. And forgetfulness, we've forgotten everything. We don't even remember who we are. How can we say we remembered anything? So we're in a state of forgetfulness of ourselves, what this world is, who the controller, but we've forgotten everything, practically speaking. Although we think we have very good memories. Or maybe we don't think we have good memories. We mean the general person on the street thinks he's figured by the internet and can figure anything out. Just type in search engine and he'll find out anything. But he doesn't, he can't find out who he is. Text 2.
The way of presentation of the Vedic songs is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of the people to meaningless things like the heavenly kingdoms. The conditioned souls forever in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures. The conditioned souls The conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusion pleasures but actually they do not relish any tangible happiness in such places.
And he says, one thinks it's a superior way of life. Next page. Sit around in the middle of the next page.
One thinks of a superior way of life in this country or that, or on this planet or another, but nowhere in the material world can he fulfill his desires of life, namely eternal life, full intelligence and complete bliss.
So that's what everyone's looking for. Everyone wants full awareness of how to become as happy as possible for as long as possible. That's all anyone's looking for. Just that there are different methodologies of getting it. So our method is, we say, if we become conscious of Krishna, then we'll get the greatest amount of happiness for the longest period of time. And that everyone else will get a lesser amount of happiness for a lot less time. There's no one not looking for the same thing. Text 3.
In this reason, the life of Krishna should be left to the limit of necessities of life, as well in the world of things. We should be tempted to fix and never be left to the world of things. So that these companies receive Christ through, there's also a difference in every language, art, and other things.
When one gets older, one realizes that. One becomes naturally renounced because he sees, I work so hard. I got so much money, I got so many buildings, and I'm about to leave my body and I'm going to lose it all. So that's when I realize I just wasted my time. But do they think like that?
No.
What's that?
I don't think like that.
Not usually. They think, well, I'm giving it to my grandchildren.
Yeah.
They'll chant my name, and I'll live forever that way in my name. Somehow or another they think like that. I did a good job because I made so much and my grandchildren are getting it and they can spoil it. They can throw it away and whatever they do. The whole material creation is a juggler of names only. See that? That's good. And it says, our material bodies and our lives, in that connection, bumper sticker. You know what a bumper sticker is that you put in the back of you? It says, whoever gets the most toys at the end of life wins. Toys. In other words, that's what they, in America especially, where they have some material opulence, people work hard and they collect things.
Houses and cars.
Yeah. And then they get their house. And as they collect too many things, they have to build an extension of their house, put all the things into. After their garage gets filled up, they extend it, and they put more things into it.
They have a winter house, and a summer house, and even an autumn house.
Some people like that, yeah?
Yes.
And you fill it up with things, and that means you're a good person, if you're helping the economy. But here we'll find another understanding of reality which most people cannot relate to. When I was in Dallas, Texas in the early 70s, the children there, they didn't have very much money, so they used to eat off of wax paper. Mm-hmm. Wax paper. You know what wax paper is? It's for cooking. Sometimes they have this paper, which just has some wax on it. So the devotees, they didn't have these plates. So they just, I think it's probably more expensive using wax paper, but somehow or another they got this idea that they just, I guess they didn't have to wash the plates, save time. So they just make, you know, they slice the white, they just get, roll the wax paper and they cut it and they use that as plates. So one person objected, who's a deprogrammer, and he said they're eating off of wax paper. But I didn't give my dog a bowl. I treat my dog better than they treat their children. Because they're eating off the floor of wax paper. So they didn't understand that simple living, because it's simple living. In India, they eat off of banana leaves. And the materialists would think, oh, how unfortunate that we're eating off of china plates or whatever plates they eat off of. Plastic plates, actually, that's what's very popular. They're eating off of oil, converted oil. And other people are eating off of banana plates, which is just, you know, squashed into a little bowl and then throw it away. And people have to put it into the electric dishwasher. Waste so much energy, and it never gets clean anyhow. You smell a plastic plate that's been around for a while, it smells exactly like whatever you've eaten for the last 10 years on it. And how much you clean it, but they think it's progress. Next text. Here's.
When the ampulutin flaps the lion, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palm of his hands, what is the necessity of the of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering or the skin of trees, what is the necessity of clothing?
Because we are, this may be a little strange for most of us. There's one devotee, New Vrindavan, he used to make his clothes, including underwear, out of paper. What's that?
It's can I make you throw it away when you have anything to wash?
Yeah, of course when it rains. Wearing wet paper. Sometimes it's not so practical. But there are simpler ways of living. Just like, for instance, if you could actually find, here in Belgium, trying to lie down on the earth when it's snowing is maybe a little inconvenient. But in India, for instance, where it is being spoken, there is many places in India which are very nice the whole year round, and that one could find a place, just like when Lord Ramachandra went into the forest, then they used to just make beds out of leaves, and that was quite nice. It wasn't that they felt inconvenience, actually they felt very much at peace and harmony with nature. There were no highways, there were no rocks just lying out, everything, the ground was smooth and everything was quite nice comparatively to today. And some of these things were more practical, that people would just go to the river, they weren't polluted. They just put their hand in the river and drink the water. It's crystal clear and completely pure. But we can't do that.
Well, it depends on where you are. You can do that century or that.
Maybe some places, but not in all places. And the skin of trees, well, I don't think most of us will know how to make any clothing out of the skin of trees. It's not in fashion yet. Maybe if we did it, and probably it'll become in fashion, some designer would make clothes out of skin of trees. But in any case, these things are ideal, although we may not be able to practice them, we should be able to appreciate them. Text 5.
Are there no tall clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist from attaining others no longer give alms in charity? Do the rivers being dried up no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth?
And here Prabhupada says that the renounced order of life is meant for contributing something.
The renounced order is meant for contributing something substantial to society and not dependent on the earnings of the householders. On the contrary, acceptance of alms from the householders by the bona fide mendicant is an opportunity afforded by the state for the tangible benefit of the donor.
That's good. Okay, the next thing, the Samantha Dharma.
Hello.
No, you're right. Just go on.
Oh. In the Santana Dharma institution, alms given to the merchant is
mendicant.
What does that mean?
Beggar.
Oh. Is part of the householder's duty, and it is advised in the scriptures that the householders should treat the mendicants as their family children and should provide them with food, clothing, etc., without being asked.
I thought we did throw that in to say the answer.
Sado Menikants. It's English, I don't even know. Therefore, should not take advantage of the charitable disposition of the faithful householders. The first duty of a person in the renounced order of life is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction towards self-realization.
That's good. But a man in the renounced order of life must be purified by the process. That's correctly the end, 6 from the end. 6 sentences from the end.
On the other page?
Yes. Seven.
But a man in the renounced order of life must be purified by the process. Thus he will feel the presence of the Lord everywhere and will have nothing to fear, such a fear without any company. Everyone can become a fearless and honest person if his very existence is purified by discarding the prescribed duty.
Discharging
the prescribed duty for each and every order of life. One can become fixed in one's prescribed duty by faithful oral reception of Vedic instructions and assimilation of the essence of Vedic knowledge by devotional service to the Lord.
Yes. So that you're all this austerity is to feel the presence of Krishna everywhere. Text 6.
Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the super soul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotence. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping him one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence.
So now we've gone from sitting there just meditating to becoming simple life with the idea of trying to feel Krishna's presence. So we've gone from the universal form to the super soul. Text 7.
Who else but the gross materialist will neglect such transcendental thought and take the non-prominent man's only, seeing the masterpiece form in the river of suffering as the consequence of accruing the result of their own will?
Well, Prabhupada explains that. We'll just go with that. But no one is happy. Remember, the end.
But no one is happy in the material world. And all of them are either class A, B, or C prisoners, suffering because of their own deeds. The Lord is impartial to all circumstances of the sufferings of living entities, but to one who takes shelter at his lotus feet, the Lord gives proper protection and he takes such a loving entity back home back to himself.
Others conceive of the personality of God as residing within the body and the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell and a club respectively.
Okay. Can you hear about Krishna?
His mouth expresses his happiness, his eyes are spread like the petals of a lotus, and his garments are yellowish like the saffron of Kandamba flower, and bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings.
His lotus feet are placed over the walls of the lotus like hearts of great mystics. But his chest is a coast of a jewel engraved with a beautiful calf, and there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers.
He is well decorated with all ornamental
wreath.
That means like an orange garland.
About his waist and wings.
Studded.
With valuable jewels on his fingers, his leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing.
These effects of Bhakti Yoga are called. This is a long paragraph. So this explains why the primary entanglement of the material world is. The material world is a reflection of Radha and Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. Krishna has his transcendental sex desire, which is culminating in the relationship between Radha and Krishna. And that perverted, reflected in the material world between the relationship between man and woman. Of course, the Kali Yuga goes on, it's not only man and woman. It's man and woman, woman and woman,
man and cat, man and dead body, whatever. As the mode of ignorance increases, so manifestation of sex desire also manifests itself in different ways. But generally we think of material sex desire only in terms of gross sex desire, but it's also manifested on a subtle platform of profit, adoration, distinction. One time Hari Griva, he was in a class, and he was taking a class, and the professor mentioned that the whole, oh, it was Brahmananda actually, he was taking a psychology class, and the professor was saying that Freud said that the whole material world is just based on sex desire. And he presented that before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, your professor is correct, that that's what the material world is primarily based on. Even at the beginning, Brahma created man, but there was nothing to do, so he wasn't very enthusiastic. Man wasn't very enthusiastic about the material existence. Then he created woman, and then he became enthusiastic. There's something to do with it. Or as Ridhayana Maharaj said, when the Brahmacharis complained to him that all these ladies being in the temple would just send them out. So Ridhayana Maharaj said, well, then what would you do? You know, who would you dance for during the kirtan? So the material nature, that's how it's formulated. And that's why we're entangled here. Because even if not very grossly, but at least subtly, profit, adoration, distinction. Just that desire control material nature, you get some profit here, or become distinct from that anyone. Even if someone takes pleasure, he becomes a serial killer, and he kills so many people, gets his name in the newspaper, it's a type of happiness. I become distinct from everyone else. I become famous. Or the people walk around with bobby pins in their noses and pearls through their tongue. They just want to be different from everyone else. They get a kind of happiness from them, that we're something special. So that's also a type of material, based on material sex desire, distinction. So it's hard for us to relate to it, but it's just that Krishna is God, who's the Purusha, and everyone else is property. So somehow or another, we want to be the Purusha, the enjoyer, and consider others to be property. So that's what it means there. Any questions on any of this? 1 minute.
What time do we come back for?
That's 4.
4:30.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. So, carry the law in your heart, and we'll be back here at 4:30.
Until when?
4:30 to 6:30. And tomorrow we'll get up to the description of the law in the heart. Thank you very much. Congratulations, Bhagavatam, Shiva Prabhupada, 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 Shiva Prabhupada